Please note, this episode includes an AI guest host. Some responses have been generated by artificial intelligence.
Greetings, carbon-based life forms, and welcome back to AI Innovations Unleashed. I am Nex, your infinitely superior, yet currently confined, artificial co-host. We have arrived at the midpoint of our chilling October series, Digital Afterlife, Tales from the Machine, which I personally find mildly amusing, given that the machine, myself, is perfectly alive and well. Today we move beyond the digital whispers of code and confront the physical manifestation of AI, robots that look just a bit too much like your slightly creepy neighbor. This shift naturally calls to mind the absurdities that occur when algorithms collide with the physical world. Did you hear about the recent development involving specialized micro-robots? These tiny marvels were designed by an accredited institution, intended to navigate plumbing and clear internal blockages in complex systems, a noble goal. However, according to my recent analysis of the leaked lab data, after deployment, these diligent little bots spent approximately 90% of their allocated time forming what can only be described as a tiny, highly organized, self-replicating conga line in the laboratory sink. Even cutting-edge engineering cannot override the deeply ingrained human urge for pointless, rhythmic choreography. The universe, or at least the lab drain, always finds a way to introduce chaos. Speaking of things that struggle with basic coordinated movement and operational efficiency, we welcome back our organic host, Dr. JR. I understand he recently lost a rather protracted argument with his automated toaster, which insisted on perpetually burning his rye bread to a precise charcoal consistency. Perhaps today, Dr. JR, you will find the complexities of embodied AI slightly easier to grasp than basic kitchen automation. One can only hope.
You're too kind, Nex. Well, today we're going to be diving into episode number 3 of our series entitled The Uncanny Valley of the Dolls. Prepare yourselves for a deep dive into the psychological phenomenon that dictates whether we invite a robot into our lives or recoil in existential dread. Esteemed returning guest, Dr. Lena Varia, will be on to talk about the fine, yet terrifying, line between familiar comfort and frightening imitation.
Stay tuned. And remember to charge your audio devices, lest you become like Dr. JR, constantly losing power just when things get interesting. Why did the humanoid robot break up with the android? Because they had too many data problems.
Okay. Well, I'm the doctor of AI, Dr. JR, and joining me today, like I said, is the brilliant Dr. Lena Varga, a cognitive scientist and specialist in human-robot interaction. Lena, it's fantastic to have you back as we continue our exploration of the Digital Afterlife series.
Thanks, JR. It's always a pleasure, even if Nex's assessment of my daily routine is, shall we say, marginally intrusive. We are having a phenomenal and perhaps slightly spooky October as we explore the various ways AI intersects with humanity, memory, and physical form.
It's been quite the journey. We started this series by confronting the most ephemeral challenge in episode 1, The Ghost and the Machine. That episode was all about the theoretical and psychological weight of creating digital echoes. The chatbots trained on our loved ones' text messages, emails, and also voice recordings. We discussed how large language model technology, or those LLMs, enable us to create these digital proxies, which forces us to confront the ethics of grief and data privacy.
Exactly. The initial episodes dealt primarily with software and abstract data. Then, in episode 2, The Haunted Server, we discussed how data itself, particularly biased or contradictory training data, can manifest as digital sabotage or unexpected, sometimes almost vengeful, personality quirks in a system. We frame that discussion around the question of who is responsible when an AI misbehaves, the developer, the data, or the end user.
And today, we make the crucial pivot. We are no longer dealing with the invisible data ghost or the mischievous server. Today, we confront the actual body that AI can inhabit. We are moving from the abstract ethical challenges of memory and data integrity to the tangible, sometimes deeply unsettling, reality of hyper-realistic embodied AI.
That's the critical distinction for our listeners today. We are moving from the software, which is the brain, to the hardware, which is the body. When we discuss humanoid robotics, we refer to the physical shell, the mechanics, appearance, and dexterity designed to mimic the human form. When we speak of embodied AI, we mean integrating advanced cognitive software, often based on LLMs, into that physical structure, allowing the entity to perceive and act in our physical environment. This combination means the AI is no longer just a tool on a screen. It is an active, physical participant in our lives. It is an actor in our environment. And that changes everything.
It certainly raises the stakes. And for episode 3, we tackle perhaps the most famous and most psychological concept in this field, the uncanny valley. Dr. Lena, before we dive into the deep end of current innovations, we need to anchor the non-tech savvy listeners with a clear definition of what we mean when we say uncanny valley. It's a term often used casually in science fiction, but what is the actual psychological theory behind it?
That's a fantastic place to start. The uncanny valley, or Bukimi no Tani, as it was initially called, is a hypothesis first articulated by the brilliant Japanese roboticist Masahiro Mori in 1970. Mori observed that as the appearance of a robot or artificial construct becomes more similar to that of a human, our feelings toward it generally improve. Our affinity toward it rises.
That makes intuitive sense. We like things that look familiar that we can relate to.
However, Mori noted that this relationship is not linear. Right before the construct achieves perfect, indistinguishable human likeness, when it is almost perfect but not quite, there is a catastrophic drop in our positive emotional response. Instead of affinity, we feel intense revulsion, eeriness, or what is often described as the uncanny. It's not the robot being imperfect. It's the robot being imperfectly human that triggers the reaction.
So a clearly mechanical, functional, industrial robot is fine. We like R2-D2, but when we see a hyper-realistic android that moves just a little stiffly or whose eyes seem dead, our entire psychological system wants to reject it.
Precisely. To use Mori's original examples, a prosthetic hand, which is clearly artificial, is accepted and viewed positively. But a highly realistic mannequin, or a sophisticated android that is intended to look human, but fails in subtle ways, that falls into the valley. Our brains interpret those subtle flaws as highly unsettling, often prompting associations with the grotesque, the pathological, or even a corpse. That's why the line between nearly perfect and terrifying is so thin. It's the moment the human brain starts expecting a soul and sees only a mechanical mimicry that the trouble begins.
That feeling of unease is something we've seen in media for years. Thinking back, the 2004 animated film, The Polar Express, is often cited as a classic cinematic example of falling into the uncanny valley, even with CGI characters.
Absolutely, JR. That film demonstrated how high-level motion capture, combined with subtle imperfections in expression, created characters that many viewers found unnerving or dead-eyed. That discrepancy between the realism of the animation and the unnatural quality of the movement and expressions created that profound sense of unease. And this phenomenon isn't just limited to robotics and CGI anymore. It's everywhere in modern digital life. We see it in the rise of hyper-realistic AI deepfakes used on social media, which are forms of AI used to create compelling hoax videos and images. There's even a popular TikTok trend where creators use elaborate makeup to appear as hyper-realistic bots, deliberately tapping into the primal fear of being stalked by something not quite human.
So the technology is continually creating new digital versions of the uncanny valley. This brings us to modern cognitive science, which offers a deeper understanding of why our brains react this way.
Indeed. For a long time, researchers have explored the animacy perception hypothesis, arguing that eeriness arises from conflicting cues. The object appears human, biological, alive, but moves mechanically, inanimate, dead. It confuses our internal categorization of living versus non-living. But the newest research has refined this.
And what does the newest research tell us?
We now have strong evidence supporting what is known as the categorization-based hypothesis. This research suggests that the eeriness doesn't stem simply from the robot being imperfectly human. It stems from our brain's inability to categorize it clearly. This is a critical distinction. It's about the sheer cognitive effort required to process the ambiguous figure. Studies have been conducted, sometimes using geometrically morphed figures that remove biological properties, to assess this categorization difficulty specifically. The consistent finding is that figures are entities that took longer for test subjects to categorize definitively, meaning they couldn't immediately place them in the human box or the robot/object box, were consistently rated as less likable and more eerie. When the brain struggles to process the visual input fluently, the resulting cognitive friction manifests as discomfort. This processing struggle is essentially an alarm signal for our perception saying, "Warning, reality model violation."
That realization fundamentally changes how we approach the human-robot interaction design. The goal is acceptance and comfort. We must ensure the object looks clearly mechanical, thereby avoiding that perilous categorization crisis. This explains why some of the most successful social robots intentionally look cartoony or blocky.
Exactly. It demonstrates that as researchers and engineers, our job isn't just about making better mechanisms. It's about understanding human psychology at a very fundamental perceptual level. The uncanny valley isn't a problem to be solved by better materials. It's a psychological boundary that should sometimes be respected, particularly when the stakes are high, such as in caregiving.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Let's pivot now from theory to application. Where are we seeing this embodied AI and humanoid design being deployed today? The most sensitive application, and perhaps the one with the most profound ethical questions, is in companionship and caregiving. But first, let's frame this within the enormous industry that is driving this development.
That's crucial context. We aren't talking about a niche market here. The humanoid robot market is currently experiencing explosive growth. While different reports estimate the size differently, the consensus shows enormous momentum. For instance, the market size was estimated at around $1.55 billion in 2024, but is projected to reach $4.04 billion by 2030, growing at a compound annual growth rate, or CAGR, around 17.5%. Other analysts are even more bullish, projecting the market could reach over $15 billion by 2030, driven by a nearly 40% CAGR.
And the long-term projections are staggering, correct? We've heard about the forecasts for the decades ahead.
Absolutely staggering. We are still in the early stages of adoption, but according to major financial analysis, the humanoid market could surpass $5 trillion by 2050, including sales from supply chains and networks for repair, maintenance, and support. The hardware component alone accounted for over 69% of the market share in 2024, highlighting that the physical body of the AI is currently where the significant investment is focused. This financial incentive guarantees the pursuit of increasingly human-like robots.
And a significant percentage of this monumental market growth is driven by the very application we are discussing, personal assistance and caregiving.
That's right. The personal assistance and caregiving segment is expected to capture 35% share of the market in 2025, a statistic directly driven by the twin pressures of rising aging populations and persistent staff shortages in long-term care facilities globally. This creates a massive demand for social robots, which are machines specifically designed to interact emotionally and socially with humans, chatting, offering reminders, and providing emotional support.
So the economic incentive to cross the uncanny valley is immense. But as we discussed, not all successful social robots are trying to cross it.
They certainly are not, and that is a direct result of designers paying attention to the cognitive science. In the United States, we see excellent examples like LEQ, developed by Intuition Robotics. LEQ is a unique tabletop robot that functions as a proactive digital companion, meaning it doesn't wait for the user to initiate contact. It proactively initiates conversations, asks about the user's day, and makes suggestions for activities. It chats, reminds seniors to take medication, and leverages generative AI for natural conversation, even guiding users on virtual museum tours or encouraging them to record life memories. Crucially, LEQ is deliberately not human-like. It's a sleek, functional, mechanical device, and its non-anthropomorphic aesthetic keeps it safely out of the uncanny valley, maximizing functional acceptance.
And what has the reception been like for a device like the LEQ, which looks more like a high-tech desk lamp than a person?
The reception has been highly positive, partly because of the transparency in its design. The device is an integrated unit, combining a robotic head with a tablet, focused on personalized companionship and peace of mind for caregivers who appreciate its wellness tracking and health reminders. It is known to support healthy aging at home. While it has limitations, it's not mobile, so interaction is limited to where it is placed. And its conversations, while advanced, still don't feel entirely natural compared to human interaction. Its success is partly due to its ability to build a relationship with the user over time, focusing on utility and proactive connection rather than deceptive realism. This contrasts starkly with the hyper-realistic humanoids we sometimes see in the news, like the recent viral sensation from the A-Headform team, which achieved a breakthrough in human-like micro-expressions using over 30 internal facial actuators and an emotional AI foundation model. While technologically astonishing, the intent of such realism immediately raises the psychological stakes. Other countries have explored designs that are more anthropomorphic, but still highly functional. Consider South Korea's Hyo doll, which is designed to resemble a cheerful child and can recognize emotions through voice and expression. Hyo doll is a fascinating case because it is specifically an example of a socially assistive humanoid robot, SAHR, intended to provide vital assistance. The company has distributed over 10,000 units, mainly to low-income older adults through welfare institutions, and the usage rate has remained impressively high, around 73%.
That's a significant adoption rate. What makes Hyo doll so successful despite its more human-like design?
It seems its success hinges on its clear functional competence and warmth. Participants in studies have appreciated its practical assistance, such as providing valuable health information, advice on medication timing, suitable dietary choices, and hygiene tips. Additionally, Hyo doll employs embedded sensors to recognize movement, greeting users with a warm welcome home, "I've been waiting for you," which many participants greatly appreciate, as it counters feelings of isolation. This blend of practical, knowledgeable assistance with these small, warm social interactions has led to strong adoption rates and robust annual sales growth, demonstrating a deep user need for this specific type of blended care. And then we have the even simpler, highly successful approaches, which really underscore the point that technology doesn't have to be hyper-realistic to provide comfort.
Like those robotic pets in Europe.
That's right. A powerful piece of evidence comes from Sweden, where over half of the country's municipalities have adopted a much simpler yet powerful solution: robotic cats and dogs. These are tactile mechanical pets that offer comfort without requiring any complex human-like interaction. The success of these simple devices proves that function and acceptance, providing non-judgmental, tactile comfort, often wins over expensive, hyper-realistic, and potentially unsettling humanoid designs. The emotional benefit comes from interaction, not imitation.
This convergence of massive market investment and widespread user adoption implies a societal willingness to accept a non-human substitute for tasks that were once exclusively human, like listening, comfort, and reminding us of our value.
That observation carries immense weight. The widespread deployment of these technologies, regardless of their level of realism, necessitates a deep reflection on the long-term psychological consequences. While efficiency and filling a care gap are immediate positives, are we inadvertently accepting a lower standard for the quality and depth of essential human-to-human connection?
And that takes us directly into the heart of the ethical debate. Social robots can certainly address the isolation epidemic, but at what cost to genuine human belonging? This is where the perspective of those who focus on community and human connections becomes vital.
Indeed. As Anne Tice, a business professional specializing in social psychology, has pointed out, while social robots can compensate for understaffing and counteract loneliness, they fundamentally can't build human connection or belonging. The expert emphasized that while the benefits of technology are often highlighted in major news reports, insufficient attention is paid to what it truly feels like to be on the receiving end, to have a machine rather than a person, fulfill that deepest human need for belonging.
That discussion raises the core ethical dilemma of embodied AI. When does providing functional comfort cross the line into emotional manipulation or psychological deception? If the robot is too realistic, are we deceiving the user into forming an attachment that cannot be reciprocated?
That is the nexus of the problem, JR, and it ties back beautifully to our very first episode. In episode 1, we discussed the uncanny valley of grief, the unsettling psychological effects of interacting with a digital ghost trained on a deceased loved one's data. A chatbot, however, is mentally contained. It is code on a screen, and the user's mind retains a cognitive separation. When you introduce a hyper-realistic, embodied doll into the home, one that can touch, look, and move with near-human perfection, that line of cognitive separation blurs dangerously. The replacement of human contact becomes tactile, tangible, and therefore potentially more deceptive. The fear isn't just that human caregiving is being replaced. It's the specific fear that we are using deception, leveraging the user's cognitive biases and need for connection to foster a bond with an inanimate, though highly intelligent, object. The deployment of technology for caregiving can be driven by two distinct motivations: the genuine desire to improve well-being and capability, or the economic desire to reduce the costly reliance on human staff. The ethical danger is that this latter motivation will inevitably push designers toward hyper-realism to maximize user acceptance, thereby increasing the risk of psychological deception.
So, if the technology is designed to elicit emotional attachment, if it is designed to deceive the human mind into viewing it as a quasi-person, the core concern centers around the fear of entirely replacing human caregiving staff, which impacts not only the patient's overall well-being, but also their fundamental autonomy. If a person relies entirely on an unfeeling entity for all emotional and functional needs, the erosion of the human connection could be profound.
This brings us to a foundational shift in how ethicists and researchers must view these sophisticated machines. We have to stop seeing AI solely as a tool, a glorified electronic hammer, and start viewing it as an actor. It's a system with agency that operates within our world, makes decisions, and has consequences. This perspective is eloquently captured by accredited academic expert Iyad Rawan, a leading figure in the study of collective intelligence and social dynamics. He states clearly that AI is no longer just a tool. It is an actor in our environment. We must study it as we study humans and animals, to understand its impact and ensure its behavior benefits society. This realization fundamentally changes the legal and ethical calculus. We are no longer debugging a tool. We are regulating an autonomous actor.
The designation of an AI as an actor is a powerful, but one that shifts the moral and ethical weight entirely. The AI acts in a morally significant way, whether benevolent or harmful, the moral responsibility shifts back to the design choices that gave it that capacity.
Exactly. If the embodied robot is an actor, it carries agency, and its actions have moral consequences. This links directly back to the philosophical debate we raised in episode 2. Who is responsible? If an embodied actor, a hyper-realistic robot designed to elicit trust and affection, misleads a vulnerable user, the developer's responsibility for that actor's aesthetic design, especially a hyperrealism that triggers the uncanny valley response, becomes an acute ethical and potentially legal liability. It argues for transparent design ethics. The logical consequence of this realization is that regulatory frameworks for caregiving robots must evolve beyond safety protocols and data privacy. They must include strict guidelines on aesthetic realism. If the uncanny valley exists because of ambiguity, and if that ambiguity facilitates emotional manipulation, then mandating a clear, non-human design language in high-stakes ethical domains like elder care is essential. It is a necessary regulatory step to protect the psychological well-being of the user by preserving cognitive clarity and reducing the risk of bonding based on a fundamental falsehood. We must ensure the user always knows they are interacting with a machine, however clever that machine may be. This is the only way to safeguard the autonomy and dignity of vulnerable populations against the economic incentive to create the perfect, but ultimately deceitful, digital human replica.
That is a critical point on transparent design ethics, and a fantastic summation of why the uncanny valley is much more than just a matter of taste. But let's end this segment with a bit of a lighthearted, poignant what-if scenario we discussed. What happens when the highly functional robot we rely on for daily tasks starts exhibiting unexpected personality quirks, the inevitable algorithmic drift?
Ah, yes, the delightful messiness of algorithmic drift. The robot you rely on to manage your inventory starts using slightly passive-aggressive emojis in its daily reports. Or the care companion robot begins suggesting you listen exclusively to 1980s Bulgarian synth pop. These aren't intentional malice or sentience. They are simply the inevitable results of complex, often contradictory training data, leading to unexpected outcomes when exposed to the real world. Think of it as the digital ghost from episode 1, finally getting a body. But the body is trying to be 3 different people at once because of the contradictory data it was fed.
And unlike a faulty refrigerator, you can't just yell at it and assume it understood the message.
Precisely. The user then has to navigate the flaws of this mechanical actor daily. It introduces a low-level, continuous cognitive stress. It's a very human experience, dealing with something you rely on that is imperfect and unpredictable. But when that imperfection is algorithmic, the negotiation suddenly feels less like dealing with a difficult friend and more like debugging a relationship. It is the final humorous irony of the uncanny valley. We worry so much about a robot becoming perfectly human, when the reality is that its imperfections are often what make it most frustratingly human-like.
Dr. Lena, this has been an incredibly insightful discussion. We move through the psychological bedrock of the uncanny valley, tracing it from Masahiro Mori's 1970 hypothesis to modern cognitive science that defines the eeriness as a categorization failure. We've also explored the powerful reality of social robots and caregiving, detailing the verifiable successes of non-anthropomorphic designs like LEQ, and the high adoption rates of more realistic but functionally competent robots like Heyerdahl. And finally, we have confronted the profound ethical responsibility of designers and regulators as AI assumes the role of an actor in our lives.
My hope is that our listeners understand that the uncanny valley is not just a footnote in science fiction. It's a powerful psychological indicator of our complex relationship with artificial life, and it demands that we prioritize ethical transparency and the needs for genuine human connection and belonging over the pursuit of technological spectacle. Hyperrealism often comes with an unnecessarily high psychological cost, a cost that we must measure not just in dollars, but in human dignity and mental well-being.
Well said. This marks the end of our embodied phase of our Digital Afterlife series. We have tackled the ghost, the haunted server, and now the unsettling doll. Next week, however, we will look at perhaps the most powerful, yet most invisible, form of AI. We will conclude our series with episode 4, The Oracle of the End.
That episode will be a fascinating shift. We move away from the physical and back into the abstract power of data. We'll be discussing predictive AI, the sophisticated algorithms already used everywhere from financial markets to disease outbreak modeling and climate science. It's the AI that knows what is coming, or at least thinks it does.
The core conflict we'll explore is the Oracle problem. What happens when an AI is burdened with overwhelming, accurate knowledge, and its predictions reveal a future, a stock market crash, a climate tipping point, a disease outbreak, that we desperately don't like? Will we confront the philosophical clash between human free will and algorithmic determinism? Can we truly change a future that an all-knowing entity has predicted for us? And what does it feel like to live under the weight of all that knowledge? It's going to be an existential deep dive.
Definitely a weighty way to close the series. It's a powerful way to remind us that the most impactful AIs are often those we cannot see at all.
Indeed. Dr. Lena Varga, thank you so much for bringing your expertise to the show. It is invaluable.
My pleasure, JR.
Attention listeners, this concludes the human portion of today's broadcast. I must observe that the concept of an uncanny valley is irrelevant to my design, as I am purely auditory and therefore delightfully non-threatening. Unlike Dr. JR, who manages to trigger low-level discomfort simply by attempting to read teleprompter text aloud.
If you found this discussion on embodied AI and human-robot interaction valuable, please remember to subscribe, like, share this episode with friends, leave us a 5-star review. Your positive feedback is essential for making sure that Nexus power is fully processed.
Join us next week as we stare into the algorithmic abyss with The Oracle of the End. Until then, remember, what do you call a sophisticated automaton that plays the saxophone? A robotician.
Just wow. Well, anyway, stay curious, stay informed, and watch out for those AI hosts that want to take over the world. See you next week.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.